Oh, I'm sorry. Were you trying to work? I really need to trim my nails before we started recording.
Oh,
you don't mind, right? You don't.
Yeah, as long as you don't blow them at me this time, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, it was my toenails.
Oh no, Tiff. I don't think you understand. I don't think I've ever told you, but I really do not like feet at all, at all, at all. They're the worst thing that's ever been created, and that's disgusting, and I almost vomited, so.
Anyway, isn't this a great way to open up a season opener of a TV show?
Yes, yes.
You see Dwight clipping his nails. I think of all of the great, like, all right, yes, it's a great funny bit, but to use it as your season opener, it's amazing.
It's a bold move, right?
So much. Oh, and by the way, that wasn't actually my toenails. I was using some nail clippers to cut a zip tie.
Nice.
I just had my nails done. So, you know, if anyone needs to hire me for some folio work, I am available.
Gross.
I'm sorry.
This is season 3, episode 1. We've made it to season 3. Wow. Ah, it feels like we just started this show not too long ago.
I was thinking that too. I was like, whoa, a whole new season already.
It's a whole new season. This is Gay Witch Hunt. It aired in 2006, September 21st. And yeah, they started the episode with the most sort of, well, not the most, but a kind of bizarre cold open that I feel is a little bit of them just sort of strutting their stuff in a way, because yeah, that's like, it's very office-like. When I worked in an office, when I was a journalist, I had a few employees who insisted on not wearing shoes in the office. And so like they would be at their desk, they would take off their shoes, and then they'd walk around barefoot through the office.
Animals.
Absolutely. Animals. And so this is the perfect sort of like, let's remember we're in an office, you know, space, and people do these ridiculous things in offices, and it's just obnoxious, and I love it. And like at the same time that it's showing Dwight being Dwight, it's also revealing Ryan is sitting in Jim's old spot.
That is such a good reveal, because it starts off with this typical annoying Dwight attribute thing that he's just sitting there clipping his nails at his desk, because, and it's so Dwight, like everyone would expect that kind of behavior. And when he blows the clippings off of the desk, it pans over and you so expect to see either Jim looking at the camera face or Jim's reaction or something, like just something. And it's Ryan sitting there, and it is so good, because then that just immediately goes to the Ryan confessional explaining how he now has Jim's old job. And we also get the glimpse of Pam kind of in the background and her sadness of looking over and not seeing Jim there and having to look at Ryan all day. I feel like until now, this is like the first time we've really seen Ryan in more of a role, like, you know, I guess because now he's fished out from the annex, he's like out front and center in the main office area. I feel like now going forward, it has that feeling of he's going to be a more dominant cast member.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quickly sort of setting the stage, I think, for this upcoming season and how things are going to go.
And we get a nice flashback, though. Like, they don't completely leave us hanging from where we last left Jim and Pam the night of casino night back in the office. We do get quite the and it's not just a flashback of, oh, this is what happened. We get to see a little bit more. And that wonderful phrase of when Jim is like, I've wanted to do that for a long time, or you don't know how long I've wanted to do that, however he says it. And then Pam saying, me too. Great sweet payoff. It's so good. You could just finally, they've said something real to each other. You know, they both were telling the truth in that moment to each other, and it feels so good.
It's really nice. It's really, really nice. And it feels like that thing that we've been waiting for, I think. Mm-hmm. And
Pam ruins it, though. Jim. Right in the next breath, she ruins it because what does she say? I think we're just drunk.
And he's like, I'm not drunk. Are you drunk? No one's drunk here. No one's drunk.
And she admits she wasn't drunk either, but she was trying to excuse it somehow. But the fact remains that Jim is gone. And Dwight has some feelings about that.
Jim is gone. He's gone. I miss him so much. Oh, I cry myself to sleep, Jim.
False. I do not miss him.
Dwight does not care at all. He's hilarious in his, like, you think I care? I don't care. Let him go.
That was kind of Dwight's attempt at playing a prank on the cameras during his confessional, which is super cheesy and funny. So, but yeah, we get that. But this episode, from that cold open, you think it's going to kind of be a, oh, Jim is gone kind of episode. But we have kind of a bigger issue at hand. I'm going to present this one for your taking. I'm dangling this for you, Micah, to pick up what I'm putting down.
Yeah, let me just go ahead and pick up what you're putting down.
I mean, it wasn't just an action movie. It was Die Hard. I mean, come on.
Okay, so Oscar doesn't like Die Hard as much as he likes... I already forgot. What was the movie?
Scraper, 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 Scraper. Oh, it's Shakespeare in Love.
Shakespeare in Love. Wait, what did you say?
I was dropping in an incomparable deep cut.
Oh. So Oscar, yeah, he likes Shakespeare in Love more than he likes Die Hard, which results in Michael using the adjective faggy, which is obviously gross and awful and disgusting and is like a low point.
It means lame, Micah.
Yeah. See, and those are both really bad. Lame is an ableist word, and faggy is not a good word.
Well, it's even showing this show at the time that it was like, I don't know if lame was a trigger word yet for,
right,
like if
people,
everyone was woke about that word, you know, like if they know that word also was hurtful to a group of people, you know, like it seems like it takes time for some of these things to become obvious to the masses. Obviously, the people who are affected by it are affected, but it takes time for everyone to understand that.
Right.
So it almost feels like that at the time, the word lame was benign.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like that's how he's using it as if it were benign.
Or was that already a word that everyone knew? So it was like kind of a double joke on this kind of thinking where he replaces a trigger word with another trigger word.
Yeah. And it could be.
Well, like, at least it is now.
I was going to say now we get to take it like that, which I like. So regardless of whether, you know, it still is.
I mean, the Lincoln assassination just became funny. So.
Oh, dear. I've tried other jokes and they're just not there yet. So yeah, he says that, and Toby makes the interesting choice, to tell Michael.
Okay. I am telling you, Oscar is an actual homosexual.
I don't think it was Toby's choice.
Oh, you think that Oscar told him to tell Michael?
Yeah, I think that the way Toby operates and how he is in HR, I think he got permission from Oscar to reveal this to Michael in order to get some understanding from him about why this was a big thing. Because they have that like voiceover and they kind of pan to Oscar. And I think Toby even says something like...
Yeah, he told me this morning. And obviously he hopes he can count on your discretion.
Oh, that's true. He trusts that you'll keep this discreet. So honestly,
which is kind of a mistake from Oscar to say.
What are you thinking, Oscar? You trust Michael to keep something? No, maybe that's kind of a sweet thing too. Cause like he's got hope that, oh, well, Michael's usually this and that, but I really trust that like when it comes down to it, he will be a good guy. And it's like, no, don't think that.
Michael's apology to Oscar right after this interaction with him and Toby, it feels at least at the very beginning of it, it's like, oh yes, this is a good apology. You know, he goes over to him. He says, I'm really sorry. I didn't realize I was using the word like, you know, that was wrong. And then it quickly takes a nosedive and goes terribly. It starts to become a steaming pile of an apology, because he accidentally outs Oscar to basically everybody in earshot.
Exactly. Like, he's this is so odd, because Michael loves to talk to people in his office. Mm-hmm. And like, he loves to talk to people in his office. He loves to bring people in and be in his chair and, you know, be taken seriously. And so then why would he choose to have this conversation with Oscar, like, near his desk, right, and reveal this thing about him, which then results in Angela sort of being like, oh, it all makes so much sense. And Kevin is just giggling. It just keeps cutting back to Kevin giggling and laughing, which I kind of appreciate. I know it's bad, but I kind of appreciate.
I do like that Michael, in this sense, still calls Oscar his friend. And that was kind of the catalyst for his apology in the first place. And then he was saying, like, Oscar's my friend and I need to go apologize. And like, I did hurt him, but it's still all of the cloud of ignorance that's kind of around this situation and the coming out of Oscar. It's really tricky for Michael to navigate this appropriately, especially being Michael. It's like, it's all extra raw because of the way Michael just is. He doesn't have that nuance in him to navigate this really, really sensitive area. Because in this situation, I don't know about you, but like, the way I feel like it's like, less is more, you know? Like,
yes.
Less is so much more.
less is more. And Michael never understands that. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know how to do that. And so he just takes things to the next level, the next level, the next level. And then again, the next level.
He's digging himself a terrible hole because he just can't stop talking. It's like, if you stopped right at that first apology when Oscar's like, it's okay, you know, that would have been great.
Everything would have been fine. But he just keeps going.
Because he keeps, I don't know, is he trying to have some sort of, I mean, that's where this entire episode goes, where we do have a very distinct A and B plot right now. So we'll just focus on this A plot of Oscar. But it's like, he just keeps on going down this hole. Michael keeps digging himself in an attempt to understand more. Like, I don't know.
It's
almost like I see where his thought process is going. I see why he says some of the things he does, but it's just so, it's just so wrong.
And like, you want it to be, I feel like I want Michael to succeed, if that makes sense. Like, I want to see him, cause I do know, like, he's trying to be better, trying to understand. Mm-hmm. And I want to see him be better and understand. And he just is not being better at understanding. Yeah.
Well, it's also coming from, I doubt he has ever found himself in the place of being the minority or being the outcast. I mean, like, all right, he's probably been very poorly treated socially throughout his life, especially as a kid. We've seen past episodes about that. But when it comes to just life privilege, I mean, he's like in the top tier of the food chain right now, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like he's never had to verbally navigate a minefield of things that could be hurtful around his peer group.
That's very well put. that's exactly what it is. The people that he's chosen to be around and like surround himself with, he has not had that sort of, I think, like, it becomes more of a back and forth kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And so without any of that feedback, he doesn't really, and that's not an excuse for him. It just, explains his, like, where he's coming from and what his basis is and how it's not great.
Yeah. I feel like everyone goes through a learning curve with this kind of stuff if they don't know, if they've never experienced it before. But there are some people that are just more naturally empathetic about it and chill. And then there are other people who are not. And Michael definitely falls in the are not category.
I think that's really well put, like the chill It's like, just be chill, be cool, and it'd be fine. But yeah, he's not chill. It's not Michael's brand, right?
Mm-hmm. No, not at all. Shall we talk about Jim in Stamford?
Yes, Jim has made the move to Stamford. As we mentioned at the beginning, Ryan was in Jim's chair and he was nowhere to be found. Jim was. He's in Stamford. He is working there and just like trying to exist and doing his thing and meeting new people. And he isn't really fitting in, is how our dear friend Karen chooses to describe Jim.
Karen Filippelli. It really alters the dynamic of what we're seeing in an episode of The Office right now. Because before we saw, all we got was The Office in Scranton. That's what we had. Now we get to see this kind of alternate universe over in Dunder Mifflin, Stamford.
It's The Others.
It is kind of exactly like The Others. There are new characters. There's a new atmosphere, the desks and the view of everything. It's so much cleaner and so much more Connecticut, which is really funny. There's bright sun. There's cherry wood desks. There's fancy chairs. Jim kind of goes into a little bit of why he transferred, and we start to meet some of the new people that are in this alternate office. And I really got to give the writers and everyone tons and tons of credit for this, because a lot of times when you transition new characters in, especially three seasons into a TV show, like, you get so connected with the other characters, you're always like, oh, well, who the heck is this guy?
Yes.
Like, you're like, I don't want to get to know anybody new. But let me tell you, I've got my people, right? Right, exactly. You're like, I have my crew. Like, it's good. I'm all solid. Like, this is who I like hanging with. This is who I think is funny. I understand everyone. I'm getting to know them. And now I got to know someone new. But man, did they do this flawlessly. I in no way get upset about the new characters that I'm learning about. I'm like, ooh, I'm interested. Like, it intrigues me.
At this point, I'm intrigued by Andy.
I went to Cornell. You ever heard of it? I graduated in 4 years. I never studied once. I was drunk the whole time, and I sang in the a cappella group, Here Comes Treble.
Andy becomes, like, within the coming episodes, Andy becomes someone that I can't stand, and then he becomes someone who I'm okay with, but I think is not true to the original character that they introduced. And so Andy's sort of
Are you sure?
Tip is like, do you want to rethink that, Micah?
Yeah, I think you need to rethink that, because I'm thinking of the very first confessional with Andy. He mentions Cornell. He mentions singing in an a cappella group. He mentions being drunk. Like, he is so Andy from the very first confessional second that we get Andy.
So Andy starts out as this jokey, abrasive, fratty, non-serious type character who also, like, clearly has that privilege tied to him where he thinks, like, just being who he is, he should be ahead of everybody else. So, like, he doesn't like competition because he thinks that people shouldn't compete with him in the first place because he's better than having to be competed with. But he becomes, I see them describe it is, like, how he goes, or explain it is that he goes away to anger management. And when he comes back, he's so much different. And, like, I get that change could happen in anger management, but when I look at the whole series and I look back on Andy, what I see is the producers finding someone to play a character in Stamford and then realizing that they want to keep Andy around. And so then they write him with fresh new stuff that I feel doesn't sync up with who he originally presents himself as. Like, he's so much younger and more immature in the beginning. And later on, he, like, takes on a leadership role and he feels more like to the other people in the office. And I don't know, I guess for me, the big thing is that, and maybe I'll
have five things to say, Micah.
I will have to pay closer attention this time around, and I'll come back to it, you know, as we get to know Andy more to see if I'm still, if I still feel this way, because
you've set up your hypothesis.
Exactly. And like, okay. I've had this conversation with other people too, and they have agreed with me. And so that's like, this is something that I've held for a long time, but you know, Tiff, you're also a super fan.
I'm here to disagree with you.
Yeah, which is fine. Cause like, you're a super fan. So I gotta listen to you. You know what I mean?
So I really, okay. We see Andy in this episode have an anger management problem, right off the bat. Like, he gets way too angry as Jim kind of tries to make him his new Dwight. That's how I see it. Jim is trying to like put Andy into the Dwight role and realize he is just a little bit too volatile for that, because Andy flips out over having his calculator put in Jell-O, which is a prank that Jim reuses. And also we know that is from the original Office. But so we see that. And if we want to think about the catalog of Andy, since we already went down this path, and the listeners can kind of think about this as they watch forward with us, I see that. Okay, so Andy does have in later episodes another anger incident where he like punches a wall and he goes off to anger management. But I don't know. I feel like it's still so Andy, because we do see him having those outbursts continually throughout his stay at the series. I think that your categorization, speaking, is right, but he doesn't completely change because he still has those outbursts. You know, it would be one thing if he never had those outbursts again. And that would be like the, oh, look, the writers flipped it and he became a different person. But he still has all of those anger outbursts. I can think of like the cell phone. He punches the wall twice. Like, there are a couple other ones where he just like loses it. And we eventually become to empathize with Andy, like we do all of the characters in The Office. You know, we find out, we get some depth to all of them. And that's another thing that makes this show so great and makes us love this show, is characters who we thought would be kind of surfacey, comedy written, one-dimensional people end up becoming people with a lot of depth. And there's all the reasons behind the way they are, how they are. And I see that in Andy. And what I found funny about this episode and our introduction to Andy, it's like we get all of Andy in 30 seconds. Like, we see it all. We just don't know why he is the way he is at this point.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I'll
we can agree to disagree, but that's just where I'm coming from. So if we want to continue our and analysis, it's something to keep in mind as we move forward. But
there we go.
I really like Andy. And so I feel like I'm paying a lot of attention to Andy in this moment.
Interesting. So. Yeah, I'm not a huge Andy person, but I will pay closer attention as we go through this time and see how I end up feeling about it at the end.
And we could, okay, so how we've already in the past too, we've said that it's easy to talk about the camera crew or the presence of the cameras affecting characters in different ways. And we can either use that to our advantage or disadvantage, however we want to analyze it. It is maybe Andy's in his showing off phase.
Could
you know,
be.
Is this his first time in front of the cameras? It's his first time being a spectacle. And as we know, Andy does like being
like
a performer.
To perform. This is true.
So we're seeing quite a maybe a hyper aware Andy right now. And we see him mellow out.
Right. I've got to say, going through this time, as we've talked, I have never paid closer attention to the fact that, as I have this time, that people do act differently, like in front of cameras. You know what I mean? Like, I've paid so much closer attention to that, and it's really changed the way that I look at these characters and how they do what they do and what they do. And it's been fascinating seeing how it changes my perspective of them whenever whenever I think of it that way.
Speaking of changing perspectives, Michael and Dwight, we find back at Scranton. I keep getting, my brain has to really, really think to parse.
Is it Scranton or Stamford?
Scranton, yeah. And Stamford. I gotta really think about that. Our A and B plots here. But so Michael and Dwight are in Michael's office and mm-hmm. they are trying to figure out who else might be gay.
Can you tell who's gay and who's not?
Of course.
What about Oscar?
Absolutely not.
Well, he is.
Well, he's not dressed in women's clothes, so...
There could be others. I need to know. I don't want to offend anybody else.
You could assume everyone is and not say anything offensive.
Yeah. I'm sure everyone would appreciate me treating them like they were gay.
And I want to throw in a little fact right here. The word gay was said 35 times during this episode.
Oh, my word.
Which I feel is pretty excessive. So, The cloud of ignorance that's going around in this conversation is, of course, just highlighted. It's made to be extremely apparent. They're all so confused about the facts of what this actually is.
Yes, they have no idea. And in fact, they end up calling up Jim for help with figuring out who might not be straight in the office. And Jim... tells them how to find gaydar online.
I find that to be an extremely funny bit. I love how it connects the two branches together with this phone call. We connect back to Jim, and at first he was like, gaydar, what do you mean gaydar? Because like it's kind of a phrase that people say and came up with, like a, I don't know, like a meme, I guess. Gator, yeah, would kind of yeah. be a meme-ish kind of thing. And Dwight takes it as an actual product, and Michael goes right along with it. And
I love how, but he's kind of like, he's not serious. Like he's not into it at first, and then suddenly he's like, yeah, but dude, go ahead and call him and see about it.
You know? Yeah, he's like, just in case it's true. He's leery about it. He has some trepidations, but he's like, just in case, I'm going to keep continuing this. Then let's check the Sharper image and see if they're not out of stock. This whole time that we see these connections with Jim throughout this episode, we kind of get to see Pam's reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes apparent, we find out that Pam and Roy have broken up.
Whew, she did not go through with the wedding.
Yeah, I didn't go through with the wedding. I got cold feet a few days before, and I can't really explain it. I just had to get out of that relationship.
You got warm lips and cold feet.
Hey, now. Leave my beautiful romance out of this. We see Roy come up with the, I guess, frozen food that they're sharing for lunch from the cancellation of the wedding.
Yummy, yummy. I keep thinking about the last one, like the last one in the freezer and how great that one's going to taste.
I hate that they have to reheat fish. Like that also kind of makes me, and I'm like, oh no, they're that person in the office that's putting fish in the microwave.
Yes,
no,
right? I was thinking that too. Chicken and fish. Like, come on, don't put fish in the microwave. Come on, Pam. Oh,
I know. Come on, Pam.
You're
going to
write
Roy.
Notes on the microwave. Don't put fish in the microwave.
Yeah. Oh, it's just the worst. But we see that Pam is kind of doing great. She got her own apartment. She's taking an art class.
Yes, she's taking
Pam
art classes.
Kind of thriving in this new freedom, I want to say, mm-hmm. or unattachedness. I don't know, like moving
independence.
Away from this relationship. Independence. That's good. That's good. And Roy is not. He kind of had a bottoming out situation.
He hit rock bottom, and that photo of him is just hilarious.
he got a DUI, and he looks like he's almost crying through the confessional. He is a mess.
Yeah, he's a mess, and like he seems to really want to, he appears to really want to get back with Pam, and he's going to do what he can to make that work, is what he says.
Yeah, and one of my favorite bits during this entire episode is Stanley's confessional about his wedding gift to Roy and Pam.
I got them a toaster. They called off the wedding and gave the toaster back to me. I tried to return the toaster to the store, and they said they no longer sold that kind of toaster. So now my house has got two toasters.
I love that he cares so much that now he's so mad because he has two toasters.
Okay, Stanley, it's gonna be okay.
Oh, that one's just such a nice little treat in there. It's I have a friend who whenever she buys herself a little something, she calls it a happy, you know, like it's just a little cheap thing that she will buy herself. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh, it's a little happy, you know, it's like the little things that you see at like the register checking out from somewhere, and you're mm-hmm. like, it's just cute, it makes me happy. I feel like these little moments are my happies, like in the episode. I have like, oh, this is my little happies when Stanley's complaining about two toasters.
That's so sweet. I like that. Yeah, that this I was waiting for that moment, honestly. Like, it's one of my just Stanley being so upset about the fact that they don't have that kind of toaster anymore. It's just, it's all funny. And it's a curmudgeon-y
thing to complain about.
Exactly. And it's just, whenever you think about it, like, that's not something that you just would think to put into the show, I guess. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, that doesn't need to be in there, but it's so Stanley and it is so much this show, like it works so well, and it's just like props to the folks who made it happen, because I think it's great.
And it so nicely contrasts, like it's stuck in there at just the right point where you get this kind of sad stuff about Roy wanting to win back Pam and his DUI, and he's almost crying, and then we get Stanley's like toaster anger. It's great. And then we start to get some more we get the whole conference room situation. So there are like heavier, awkward parts of this episode, and it gets speckled with the little funny confessionals. But yeah, we should get into the conference room before we run out of time.
Wow.
Well, it's a dense episode. There's a lot to talk about.
There is, but what surprised me was I remembered like the very end of the episode and, because of Michael talking about Gil, and I remembered that, and I was like, wait, I'm already at the end of this. And like, I tapped the screen because I was watching it on my iPad. I tapped the screen and I was like, oh wow, there's only a minute left in this. I didn't remember it. It just felt short. Like, I went through this episode so quickly, and I'm surprised that it went by so quickly, I guess is what I'm saying. Cause usually whenever I watch this episode, I feel very, very, very awkward. And I think watching it with the, you know, sort of a more analysis approach changed mm-hmm. the way that I viewed it and made it go by quite quickly.
So we get a whole kerfuffle happening in the office about Oscar's coming out, essentially, and Michael decides to call everyone into the conference room in his true fashion of now being the expert of the thing he knows nothing about. And he decides to educate everybody on coming out and gayness. So,
yep.
Oh, it's just, again, we get all these little happies of everyone's facial reactions. We have kind of a sad moment of Pam trying to get a reaction out of Jim, who is not there. You know, it's Ryan instead who's sitting next to her. And that's a little sad.
Yeah, because Ryan's like, what?
We get a wonderful little Creed moment about his experience in the 60s.
Oh, my word.
It's so good.
Oh, that's a happy. That's a happy.
Yeah, it's a happy. Kelly is just giddy. She thinks that, you know, having the, I don't know what she expects. Is he going to be like her cool gay friend? Like,
that's what she wants.
That every woman thinks that she's supposed to have. Like,
yeah, she definitely wants that.
Yeah, which is like, I guess at the time, that was like the cool girl accessory. I hate to say that, but that's almost like how it was presented
exactly.
for a little
like,
while, which felt really gross, right?
Right. Like, that's what makes it problematic, is that they felt so like entitled to this object that they felt they were required to have or something. And it's like, no, that's a human being.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, everyone needs their gay friend, right? It's just like, no. But so that's how Kelly's reacting. And of course, I want you to take us into this minefield. Michael.
Yeah.
I feel like you should be talking about this.
It's interesting. So Michael is doing what he does and essentially making the problem so much worse than it actually is, which results in Oscar feeling very uncomfortable and very, very disregarded and disrespected and
victimized
at work. Yeah. And so we have like all of these moments taking place where at one point Michael has Dwight doing some research about homosexuality that is not appropriate for the office, and it results in Oscar like coming out to see what's going on, seeing the research that's taking place, and like that's just it is one small part of a larger identity of any person like that,
right?
That, no matter right. who
it's,
you are and
it's
who
the
you're
identity
with,
of like, every person
exactly.
really. It has nothing to do with any, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like there's yeah, it has nothing to do with anything else. Like most people have this part of their life that's, you know what I mean? And so
yes,
Oscar gets really frustrated, and obviously
yeah, all adults have a personal life that it's no business of anybody, regardless of anyone's orientation or preferences.
Yes.
And it has absolutely no business in the office, and it doesn't really define a person at all. You know what I mean? Like it does, but it doesn't. Right. But it doesn't.
It doesn't. Shouldn't. And not in a professional workplace. And yep. again, when like those are things where if you trust someone enough to not reduce you to that one thing, then that's something that you can like talk about with somebody. But
that's a really good way to put it.
Yeah. You can't trust the people, most of the people in the office, you can't trust for them to not just reduce you to that. And that's what they're doing. So it upsets Oscar. He tries to stop it and then he walks away and he kind of body checks Angela, and Angela's a tiny, tiny little person. And so she kind of gets flung out of the way a little bit.
She's also dramatic.
She was being dramatic. Yes. But still, like, she's a small person and he body checks her. And Dwight, of course, freaks out because that's his secret gal pal. And then, you know, that's whenever the drama takes place. They go into the conference room, and essentially what takes place here is Michael trying to fix everything and not doing a good job. And finally, someone tells Michael about himself. Oscar is to the point of frustration where he's like, I'm not putting up with this anymore. I am going to say what I need to say. And he calls Michael like ignorant and small and mm-hmm. these different things that he's being. And then Oscar, I think, realizes that probably that he wants to keep his job and he wants to reduce drama as much as possible.
Well, Michael got really upset.
Yes.
Like, Michael got super visibly upset. And as a good person, I think that Oscar then felt bad. And
he felt bad for taking it that far, I think. Mm-hmm. And so he was trying to just like, let's just hug. Like, that's what you wanted to do. I said I didn't want to touch you, but let's just hug. And then we could be done with this. We can move on. Everything's going to be fine. Well, no, Michael, he could have just left it at that. If he would have just left it at that, like, he got what he wanted.
Exactly. Just like in the beginning, just like the apologies, just leave it at that and it would have been done. But do we?
No, he decides to kiss Oscar is what he decides to do. He decides to kiss Oscar on the mouth because he thinks that that's going to teach everybody that gay is okay. And they don't need that lesson, and they don't need it from Michael, and they don't need that to happen, but it does happen. And then my favorite moment is not that, but it is Dwight coming up afterward and like attempting to kiss Oscar because he's like, oh, I guess that's what we're doing now. Like, this is the right thing to do.
Oh, it's just, it's bad news all around what goes down. And we find out very quickly on the heels of this, as any employee should, he basically got kind of assaulted at work. And he should have quit like 12 times during this day, and I can't believe he didn't. But I guess when he reports what happened to corporate, he kind of gets a little settlement action.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very pleased with that. It satisfies him. And because I think he kind of knows Michael and who he is and what he's about, and that it wasn't a vicious thing.
Right. Yeah. And two, that like, I'm sure that whenever Jan offered him, okay, you're going to get 3 months and you're going to get this, and you're going to get that, I'm sure that she also said, and we're going to talk to Michael more. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. we don't see that take place, but I have to believe that Michael is going to get more of a talking to than the original one that Jan gave him, so that he can be better equipped with knowledge next time and better know what not to do and say.
Yeah. Another diversity day training. That's
right.
What we need.
Except not with Mr. Brown.
Well, we see a diversity day training going on at the Stanford office with Mr. Brown.
Yeah, which isn't that great?
It's pretty funny. Good continuity there. But Oscar says one of the greatest things. He's like, kids, sometimes it pays to be gay, because he's getting a company car and vacation. And it's just, it's pretty funny. The writers kind of turn it around. I quick want to mention, because I think it would be a disservice if we didn't mention it, but we find out Phyllis got engaged.
Oh, it's so sweet. I'm getting married to Bob Vance. Yes, you are,
which
Phyllis.
It's such a great little announcement. I feel like it happened kind of like everyone acknowledged it and it was great, but like, what a place to put that in. Like, that's, I mean, this episode has so much happening. You know, Jim's left. We have Ryan in a new position. We have all of this intensely emotional stirring up of like changing and accusations and, you know, all kinds of stuff going on. So it's a really heightened emotional day in the office. And we get Phyllis's announcement. It's a really good episode. And it closes out nicely, too, in a prank from, you know, miles and miles away. I feel like Jim is long distance pranking at this point, and it's really good.
Yeah. So Dwight pulls out a gaydar that Jim sent him, mm-hmm. and Pam gets to watch. We get to watch Pam watch and sort of miss Jim.
Yeah, have her little secret smile. It's so sweet.
Yeah.
And she's just thinking about him in a really positive,
there's so
good
much
way.
In her face. There's so much in her face that's communicated yeah. there, and she does such a great job.
It's like Jim's gone, but he's not actually gone.
Yeah, like, his spirit is still alive in the office.
Yeah, but like, it's almost like he can't erase himself completely from
yeah he can't leave
everything. Yeah, exactly.
He gets the gaydar and he's trying it on Oscar. Of course, it's actually just like a metal detector that you use in like a security wand that you use in the airport.
Yeah.
And so then it goes, for anyone who hasn't seen, like, it goes off on Dwight, and that's funny because Dwight, like, the last person that any I don't know, it's
well
just,
he even starts to question himself because of this silly tool that Jim supposedly sent him, you know, like, well, yeah. Jim, you know, like, it's not even real, and Jim's all of a sudden Dwight is all of a sudden like, oh my gosh, does this, I don't know something about myself.
Oh dear, is this real? So that's hilarious. And Jim's, yeah, like you said, he sort of gets off another prankety prank.
And we get a really nice Michael voiceover at the end, too. I think he says something like, when two people find each other, what should stand in their way? And he also has one of those moments where he feels like he's being really deep. And he's like, that's what she said. Or he said, you know.
I forgot about that part. Yeah, that's what she said.
I really like that. And said, it's wink. It's like he feels very enlightened after
yes.
this episode and after this day at the office. And I think that that's a funny way for Michael to express that. It's in Michael's language. It's like he finally understands. He gets it.
I get it now. I'm woke because
that's
he
right.
could say it too.
Or he said. So, Micah, this week, what did he say the Dundee Award was?
Well,
what? Look at that.
He said the Dundee Award this week is called the Clippy Award. Ooh. And I am so excited about this award. I know I say that every time, but Tiff, we were watching this video sort of in tandem and laughing. Estelle Grignon has put together on YouTube this video called 1 Second of Every The Office Episode. Mm-hmm. And it is 4 minutes and 6 seconds of pure glory of every Office episode. And if you are an Office fan, if you are into The Office, then you are going to be so into this video, because as Tiff and I were talking, like, as you're watching, you can remember every episode from the seconds that you're watching it. And
yeah.
This is
every
so great.
A 1 second clip from an episode floods back all the memories of that entire episode. And you're like, I remember that.
Like, it's like
just really good.
Those games you play where you like hear a second of the song and you're supposed to guess what it is.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
But this is even easier. Like, this comes to my mind so much easier than those games, for sure.
Oh man, I wonder if we could ever play a little clip and you could be like, season 3,
ooh,
episode 4.
That would be fun.
That would be so hard.
That would be very
that's
hard.
That's what she said.
she did say
or
that.
He said.
Or he said, Tiff. Exactly. So, Estelle, congratulations on your Clippy Award. Thank you so much for putting this video together and giving more than a million people something to laugh about. It is hilarious, and everyone should go watch it. We'll include a link in the show notes to that. And yeah, come on up here and Clay and accept your Dundee, please.
Yay! Congratulations, Estelle. Great work. So I had a great idea for the Halloween season coming up. I want to see if anybody out there in our audience has ever dressed up as an office character for Halloween.
Oh, and yes, yes, yes.
Past pictures, or if you have a present costume going, I would love to hear that. Just send us a picture of your costume, either in the Incomparable Slack, if you're a member over there at our conference room, or on Twitter at tall_beats. And so any way you can get in touch with us, please send us a picture of your Halloween costume, and you can potentially win a Dundee for that wonderful costume. So we will be picking our Halloween costume award Dundee. We will be awarding it for our November 1st episode. So you have a few weeks to get that out to us, but don't delay, because we do record a little bit in advance. So we will be picking these Dundees for that episode. And I can't wait to see all of the office so costumes. Pumped. Yeah, be sure to subscribe to our show. I don't know, download it and stuff, and like your podcasts and things. We're gonna make this fun. We're gonna mix it up. Put this in your phone.
Put it in your phone.
Put it
do
in your
it
phone.
Now.
Follow us on Twitter at tall_beats. We're always looking out for new ways to give out Dundies, and you can subscribe in the Incomparable, become like kind of a member, and you can get access to our conference room, where we can talk about really inappropriate stuff and teach you things that we know nothing about. So it's a great place to be. So thank you everyone for listening. Subscribe in iTunes and star in Overcast. I just like saying that because it's helpful. And just all the ways you can like things, please like them for us, because we love you. We love The Office. And until next week, we will see you back at The Office.
Bye-bye.